From Warren to Shamokin, Irwin to Lebanon, this is a Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Supreme Court of the United States has issued a landmark ruling protecting the right of students attending faith-based schools to participate in state programs funding other school choice options. David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler and Stephen Bloom for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And it is budget time in Harrisburg. Will a minority of Republican lawmakers side with Democrats in going on a spending spree, or will they join their colleagues in passing a fiscally responsible state budget? I'll talk about it on this week's Town Hall Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The American Legislative Exchange Council has issued a new pension report entitled Unaccountable and Unaffordable, showing unfunded pension liabilities nationwide now top $8 trillion. Pennsylvania public employee pension funds are adding significantly to that total and are ranked 43rd nationally with unfunded liabilities of $299 billion. According to the Center Square, the report was critical of state pension funds for unrealistic assumptions about rates of return, concluding the funds cannot invest their way out of their unfunded liabilities. That could be bad news down the road for taxpayers who are on the hook for paying the difference. The Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform is warning that the state could be headed into another health care crisis if a proposed change to the state's medical liability venue rule is implemented. Translated into English, the change would allow those filing medical malpractice claims to shop for which court will hear their case, going to high verdict destinations like Philadelphia. Before the current rule was implemented, that resulted in large payouts, which in turn caused liability insurance premiums to skyrocket. A return to a system which makes liability insurance unaffordable would cause many doctors and other providers to simply close their doors, further stressing the healthcare system. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. In a high-profile case, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled this past week that the state of Maine could not exclude faith-based schools from a taxpayer-funded voucher program. The ruling is a major win for school choice advocates and secures the First Amendment rights of students attending faith-based schools. Our Capitol Watch crew is here to discuss the ruling. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. We got a great show for you today here in the studio. My pal, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to have you here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And our other all-star, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for coming.
Great to be back again, David. Thank you.
So you got your all-star team here working, and, you know, a lot of things going on in the public policy sphere, state and federal, and there's a big opening for education freedom that was just handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court. Steve, you want to talk about that?
Yes, absolutely, David. So many things happening in so many venues, as you mentioned. But on the national scope, the national scene, the U.S. Supreme Court this past week released a really important decision for kids across the country. The case is called Carson versus Macon, and it was a case that actually the facts had it started in the state of Maine,
Okay. Where
Maine had a program for – because Maine is a rural state.
Yes.
Many of their local school districts don't actually operate a secondary school.
Okay.
And so Maine had a program set up for a child in any of those districts that doesn't have its own secondary school to be able to receive essentially tuition to use at another secondary school that they would choose anywhere in the state. And it's been in operation for many years and successful. But Maine had put a specific restriction on this scholarship program that the money that the kids would take for tuition at another school could not be used at any sort of religious school.
But other private schools could.
Other private schools could use it. Any private school that was accredited, the child could go to and use this money to essentially be a voucher for tuition. And so this is, again, been going on for many, many years without any major problems except for the fact that any school that had a religious affiliation was prohibited from participating. So kids couldn't choose to go to a school that they wanted to if it were in any way religiously affiliated with this tuition grant that they would get from the state of Maine. Three families filed suit and said, you know what, under our reading of the Constitution and under some recent U.S. Supreme Court cases that suggested this was the case, they felt that, no, the Constitution does not say that you can't use that sort of funding for a religious school. And in fact, it would be against the principles of the Constitution if you were to say to kids they can't use it at a religious school. It's discrimination.
A specific religious exclusion.
Right. Specific discrimination against students who want to go to a religious school. And so they took their case through the court system. It reached the U.S. Supreme Court. It's a long process, as everyone knows. But this past week, the court released its decision, and the decision is, yes, absolutely, these portable grants for students to attend the secondary school in Maine must be made available for students who are attending any sort of school, including a religious school. And again, this is a major victory for educational choice across the whole U.S., not just in the state of Maine. We have, you know, obviously many kids go to their local public district schools and do fine there. Some do not and are seeking other alternatives and have for many years, and a growing percentage of kids are opting for other alternatives that fit their families better. But all across the country, in many states, students have not been able to use those sorts of benefits to go to a religious school. Or there's been questions raised. Opponents have tried to intimidate legislators and not to allow for programs that would allow students to take tax credit scholarships or other scholarships to religious schools. There's been controversy. Now all that is cleared away. The U.S. Supreme Court has said absolutely A-OK, in fact, mandatory, that it must be open to students who are choosing a school that has a religious affiliation under the U.S. Constitution.
Yes. And again, we're talking here about student and parental choice. We're talking about being able to find and to attend the school that the family believes is the best for that particular student, and that the state may not discriminate against religiously affiliated schools. Like any school that's accredited, all of those private schools have to be weighed equally and have equal dignity under the law.
Exactly. And it's just as if you in other aspects of our lives, you cannot discriminate against a person for their religious beliefs. So should it be in schools as well.
Yes.
And now the Supreme Court has decreed that, yes, so shall it be.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Now, as usual, some of the institutional organizations that are against giving kids the opportunity to attend a school of their choice.
The people who are more concerned about the employment of adults than the education
of children.
For example,
the Pennsylvania State Education Association, which is Pennsylvania's largest teachers union, has spoken out against this ruling. They've criticized it. They've ridiculed it. And the American Federation of Teachers, which also has a presence in Pennsylvania, another large teachers union, primarily in the urban areas, they've actually said they wrote a press release and released it about how bad this ruling is in their mind and so forth. And they had a particular line in there that really caught me. They said, "Our society ought to be ending public funding for private schools, not expanding it." Like these people at the American Federation of Teachers, this teachers union, they're literally against students having choice. They're not even afraid to say it publicly in a written press release.
Yeah. Well, it takes away from their piece of the action.
And so their monopoly is threatened.
Yes.
And so this Supreme Court case is just so important because that's the environment we're in. We're in an environment, not just in Pennsylvania, but in Pennsylvania in particular, where these powerful teachers unions are trying to shut down every option for students to do anything other than enroll in the local district school.
Well, one of the standard criticisms is that when families have choice, when students have choice through scholarships and stuff, that there's no accountability. There's the greatest accountability of all. If the parents and the kid are not satisfied with the experience, they can punch out and take all of their money with them. You know, and like this is why establishing a market for education is the means by which we will create accountability, that we will have that competitive pressure to help everyone to improve, including the regular zip code based public schools that most students will attend. But having that accountability through competition, that's the main purpose of having education reform, competition, scholarships, and school choice.
And we've really seen that through these last couple of years with the pandemic restrictions, mm-hmm. and the impact that the different attempts that school districts made to deal with that, the pandemic restrictions, has had a really disparate impact on students. And
yes.
many students have suffered 2 years of what's being called learning loss.
Mm-hmm.
Which means they aren't learning. They haven't been taught things. They've missed a
two
significant
years of their lives.
Chunk of their
yes.
lives, of their educational lives, which they can never get back. We've responded to Pennsylvania with some options for those students. One of those options is a bill that's moving through the legislature right now. It just, again, in the past week, passed through the Senate Education Committee called Lifeline Scholarships. And it, similar to the program in Maine, it would allow a child to who attends one of the 15% poorest performing schools
okay.
in the state to take the state share of school funding, make it portable, and use it for tuition at a school of their choice. And again, this the ruling in Maine now makes it clear that, of course, it could be used at any sort of private school, including a religious private school, and be perfectly constitutional. But that is just one option for students to finally begin to tailor their education to the interests they have and what their family wants for them in terms of the quality of learning. If you look at the system that the groups like the AFT and the PSEA want to keep in place, it's a system in which as if you are receiving some sort of food assistance from the government, and instead of giving you a card in order to be able to purchase the food at the grocery store of your choice, they said, we're going to help you here, but you have to come to our building to eat. And oh, by the way, there's not a menu. There's just a certain meal that we're serving each day, and if you're going to either eat it or not, but that's all you get. And we would, you know, we would think that would be wildly inappropriate.
We'd recoil at that,
even for a public benefits program,
right?
We think obviously a person should have some choice in the food that they're selecting and how they prepare it and when they eat it and all those things. Same principle here for the schools under the reign of monopoly. With the PSEA and AFT, they've been pushing for this one-size-fits-all solution. Thankfully, parents are really pushing back on that in these last few years, and legislators are really waking up, and we're seeing movement all across the country. U.S. Supreme Court has opened more doors, and the action in Pennsylvania is going to turn to the Lifeline Scholarship Bill in the full Senate in the upcoming weeks.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor, from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association.
Steve, as I'm sitting here listening to you talk, that the option that the union is asking for, which absolutely is no option for children except for public schools, the only people that it benefits that I see are the kids who can afford to go to other schools or other options. They're the only ones that actually have a choice.
Right.
At that
there
point.
Is school choice in Pennsylvania, and there's not enough of it. Unfortunately, it's inequitable.
Right.
As you
so
said,
it's
families
wealthy.
With means
right.
Can, of course, choose a school that suits their family's needs and that they're excited about and the student can really learn in. But a family without means, right now, for many of them, they're stuck on a waiting list and they can't get the educational opportunity, educational improvement tax credit, and they're just stuck.
And they're really the ones that need and deserve the opportunity that we're talking about. So
and
amazing.
And you think about, again, the long-term success of the Commonwealth and the thriving of our people. Kids need to have an educational experience that is rigorous and challenging and meaningful and prepares them for success in life, including success in the workplace. And, you know, Rebecca, you know well, we have a workforce crisis.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
And that not only are there not enough folks on the job now, that we can't find enough qualified new hires. And the only way that we're ever going to change that dynamic is if the public schools perform better and do a better job of helping our young people to learn.
Yeah, and provide opportunities that kids find exciting and find valuable and can take advantage of to learn. I think that's an important component of it too, which choice allows.
So we've got this, how can I say it the right way? We've got the issue of education, and that the answer to any kind of educational challenge traditionally has been, let's spend more money. And that a lot of priority has been given to spending the money. Less of a priority has been given to how is the money spent and what is the value that is derived from those dollars that are spent. And so that's what's gotten us into this strange, unthinking dynamic of, we'll just keep chucking away money with both hands.
Oh, by the way, the new stats just came out on Pennsylvania school spending. Our state now is spending $19,919 per student each year, one of the highest in the nation, a big jump from what it had been spending here in Pennsylvania. And while that's happening, more money is pouring into schools. Schools are also currently experiencing record level reserve funds, $5.3 billion in reserves.
The highest. Say that again.
$5.3 billion
with a B.
Dollars in reserves in these school districts across the state. Many of the schools have reserves well over the 20% that the Auditor General has recommended be the highest type of reserves any school district needs. And they're just sitting on the money. Plus, they have hundreds of millions of dollars of pandemic relief money that flowed in that they aren't spending. And they're again, highest in the funding they're receiving, highest it's ever been in Pennsylvania, almost $20,000 per student. Yet the performance levels are dropping drastically. There are multiple schools in which zero children are meeting proficiency in the basic subjects of literacy and mathematics. And these kids are being condemned to a future of, at best, economic disadvantage, at worst, crime and death. I mean, yeah. It's a terrible cycle.
And so, you know, again, when you put it in those terms, this should be pretty simple to fix. To say we as a commonwealth will not tolerate dysfunctional schools that fail our kids
utterly without accountability.
Exactly. And yet. It's been so difficult to shift the argument and the political dynamic behind it. I mean, I believe that shift is beginning to occur, but it's just like, why is it not blindingly obvious that if a school is dysfunctional, you get the kids out and give them a ticket to go someplace better?
And in part, you know, that's why I'm here talking about this today. That's why I do the work I do with the Commonwealth Foundation. We are desperately trying to get that word out. And we are up against those obstacles, those public sector unions, the PSEA and the AFT in particular, who are spending millions and millions of dollars to maintain the status quo and prevent families and children from having those choices.
So, Steve, in terms of the you know, in this field where you are working, describe the underlying political dynamics among that population of parents and students who want and need something better.
Well, of course, it's a diverse selection of children and families all across Pennsylvania, but in particular in urban areas, in the city of Philadelphia in particular, but not just in the city of Philadelphia, and even in some rural districts, the local public schools simply are chronically underperforming. And those families largely are economically disadvantaged. Many are racial minorities, and they're already facing a lot of other challenges in life. And now they have this additional challenge of going to a school that is labeled by the state, labeled by the authorities as chronically underperforming.
Yeah, everybody knows. Everybody knows.
We've measured our schools. We know which ones are the worst 15%, and they're not just slightly worse than the better ones. They're drastically worse. And again, their proficiency levels in many of these schools, for many students, is zero. They're learning no measurable skills.
And again, it makes me angry. Why would any humane kind of community, any kind of honorable society allow that to continue? Why would we condemn our children to that, knowing you know, how much they're going to miss out on in the rest of their lives if they don't receive that educational experience during their learning years?
So despite the frustration of that, I'm optimistic. Again, I believe parents and families are waking up in a really motivated way. this pandemic experience has accelerated that in many cases, and parents are speaking up. They're putting pressure on their lawmakers, their legislators, to do something about this. And we're seeing some action in the state house, which is important. And we need more, but it's got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So Lifeline Scholarships is a huge, huge example of that. Expanding the current Educational Improvement Tax Credit program is another example of that. We're hoping to see that in this current budget that's being enacted right now in Pennsylvania and in years to come.
And this is why we fight. You know, this is why we're engaged in this process. And this is why, again, as the listeners always hear me say, you've got to be involved in the process. You've got to know what's going on. You've got to care. And it may be that your local school district is great, and that's wonderful. But in other parts of the Commonwealth, they're not as well off. And that we as citizens have to be invested in everyone all across Pennsylvania, people who live lives, you know, very different from us, that it's unjust for kids in other places to be subjected to this kind of learning loss.
Well, and we talk a lot on the show about economic vitality in Pennsylvania and how do we maintain that and keep it. We need those workers of the future engaged in the economy. We really need them. So it is an investment in our future to provide opportunities that will allow them to succeed. We really need them to be a part of the economy and part of, the working people of the future so that we're a successful state.
As everyone knows, we're on the scene participating in the process right here in Sin City, Harrisburg, PA. And we thank you, as always, for choosing to live life with your brain turned on, choosing to be informed, spending time here with us. Sadly, this is all the time we have left for this week's program. But before we go, Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and the Commonwealth Foundation and the things that you're doing?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org.
Outstanding. And Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
Sure. They can find us at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The recent primary election produced an historic, perhaps unprecedented, simultaneous defeat of the powerful chairman of both the Senate and House Appropriations Committees. There were unique dynamics at play in each race, but the common thread was voters viewed the incumbents as having not been sufficiently conservative in fighting for more fiscally responsible state budgets. It is again budget crunch time under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg, and the question of the day is, will a minority of Republicans side with Democrats to again pass a bloated state budget, or will the GOP majority stick together and heed the message sent by voters? History suggests they will not heed the message. Going back to at least the administration of Governor Ed Rendell, enough Republicans have routinely sided with Democrats in ratcheting up state spending. To be fair, it should be noted in recent years the GOP has blunted the sharper edges of Governor Tom Wolf's budget proposals, but spending has still escalated at an unsustainable rate. Fiscal conservatives have pushed for enactment of the Taxpayer Protection Act and a related constitutional amendment that would constrain spending increases. TPA, as it is known, would limit annual spending increases to the rate of inflation plus population growth. Pennsylvania's population growth is stagnant, but with inflation surging at over 8%, that would still allow for a hefty spending increase. Speaking last week on Lincoln Radio Journal, State Representative Frank Ryan of Lebanon County made the point that TPA is a limit, not a goal, and that spending increases should be held to a point well under that limit. The chances for overspending are especially high this year. State coffers are flush with federal cash, ostensibly intended to blunt the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, and with state tax revenue receipts running billions of dollars over projections. Governor Tom Wolf and legislative Democrats have advanced a virtual smorgasbord of options for spending all of that cash. Looking beyond this year, however, the fiscal picture is not as bright. The state's structural budget deficit will eventually return the Commonwealth to a deficit position, resulting in the need for future tax increases. There is also a need to address the severe underfunding of the state's public employee pension systems, which are becoming even more stressed as the equity markets are in the midst of a severe downturn. Utilizing current revenue surpluses to shore up those funds and plump up the rainy day fund to smooth future shortfalls is a prudent approach and one being advanced by conservative lawmakers. Any further use of the surplus should also be limited to one-time needs and not used to fund ongoing programs. Governor Wolf is proposing to funnel hundreds of millions more into public education, despite the fact billions in federal COVID relief funds have already been distributed directly to school districts. This is a trap we have seen before. During the Obama administration, a federal program designed to combat the effects of the Great Recession provided a one-time funding bump to state government. Governor Ed Rendell designated much of it to public education. Despite the singular availability of the funds, school districts used the money to pay for ongoing programs. Governor Tom Corbett took office and did not backfill the lost federal funds with state dollars. He was then accused of having cut funding to public education, even though state funding actually increased. Corbett subsequently lost his bid for re-election. Democrats are also proposing to send one-time stimulus checks to Pennsylvania families. Inflation is currently at a 40-year high precisely because the Federal Reserve expanded the money supply to fund the trillions in stimulus programs passed by Congress during the COVID-19 pandemic. There was no corresponding increase in productivity to offset the impact of printing all that cash, creating a situation where too much money is chasing too few goods and services, the classic definition of inflation. The Federal Reserve is now raising interest rates to cool off the economy and bring down inflation. Stimulating the state's economy by shoveling more cash out the door would counter those measures and contribute to ongoing high inflation. Bottom line, the Republican majority in the state legislature needs to resist Democrat calls for profligate spending and reserve the current surplus for strengthening the state's fiscal position going forward. That is the message voters sent last month in ousting those who compromise in the name of getting things done rather than charting a fiscally responsible course. We will find out very soon whether or not the lesson has been learned. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WJUN-AM in Mexico, WQZS-FM in Myersdale, and WMSS-FM in Middletown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. ¶¶